Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Preachers Forum podcast. It's all about critical thinking, about God, the church, and spirituality. I am your host, Dr. Clint Haycock. I'm coming to you once again from The Rock, where we live in the best place on earth, North Wales, right here in the United Kingdom. Today's episode, I'm really excited about it. It features the second half of my conversation I had recently with Dr. Ash Barker. It was recorded down in Birmingham, England. This show is another installment in my series of podcasts that I've been doing for a few months now, which I'm calling British Accents. Speaking of which, what's interesting about living in this country, especially as a transplanted American who's been here nearly 12 years now, it's the variety of regional accents that you encounter in this country on literally a daily basis. Great Britain has the most diverse variety of regional accents of any country in the world, despite how physically small this island home actually is. And that's just for the people who may have been born here. You know, if you think about it, Great Britain, like most Western countries, it's incredibly diverse. It has a huge multi-ethnic population. And so, of course, Ash Barker and his wife Ange, they fit right into the mix. You know, they're originally from Australia, but they've lived in Birmingham for about 3 years now, ever since they moved here from the slums of Bangkok, Thailand, where they lived among some of the poorest of the Thai people for 12 years. And we talked about a little bit about their story in the first episode. And speaking of which, if you haven't listened to that, you probably should go back and pick up episode 1, part 1 of this conversation that I had with Ash. Now, currently, Ash and his wife live in a former vicarage in what's called the Winston Green area of Birmingham. And they fixed it all up. I mean, it was in a derelict state. It was basically unusable. And essentially, right now, I think they're probably the only white family that lives in that neighborhood. And you know what? It suits them right down to the ground, since their whole approach to ministry can be found in the title of these two episodes, Incarnational Living in the Neighborhood. All right, what does it mean to live incarnationally in the neighborhood? Well, as I mentioned in the introduction to the previous episode, the idea of being incarnational or living incarnationally, it really comes from the notion of the way that Jesus himself lived or modeled while he was on earth. Now, we talked about this in the last show. I mentioned John 1:14, the idea that Jesus took on flesh and blood and moved into the neighborhood. And as Ash said in that show, being incarnational, what does it mean? It means living in solidarity with other people, sharing life's struggles with them, demonstrating the love of God in the most practical of ways possible. And that, as he says, that's the good news. That's the gospel message. It's so much more than a person, you know, you can imagine, who doesn't know God, who apparently then becomes a Christian. And how do they do it? Well, by giving intellectual assent to a series of bullet point theological propositions or truth statements. And what happens after that? Well, in the view of many churches and many Christians alike, it's at that point that he or she can be truly welcomed into the club called the church. But is that all that Christianity and the church are all about? Do you have to believe all the right things before you can belong to the church and then be considered a Christian? Now, in the last episode, Ash and I got into the conversation about this idea of believing versus belonging. And I mentioned the book by Grace Davey. The full title of it is called Religion in Britain Since 1945, Believing Without Belonging. And what Grace Davey talks about in her book is that Britain, like so many Western countries, it's becoming increasingly more and more secularized and multi-ethnic. But she says it's really interesting. It's beset by paradoxes. And these paradoxes are fascinating, especially when we're trying to understand what is happening in this country in terms of religion. Now, for example, she says, on the one hand, many British people persist in saying that they believe in God. And yet, on the other hand, church attendance is declining. More people stay away than attend Sunday services weekly. So there's your belief without needing to belong paradox. And here's another paradox. British churches are declining institutions, in terms of numbers at least, yet paradoxically, they still have a fairly high public profile. I mean, here's an example. The Archbishop of Canterbury, who's the head of the Church of England, he still plays a pretty significant role in British society, at least in terms of attempting to set some sort of moral tone for the nation. In other words, when he talks, there's a lot of people out there who still listen. Now, whether they believe him or act upon what he says, that's a completely different matter entirely. And thus, Grace Davey maintains that there's a significant mismatch going on here, at least between statistical levels of religious practice and the levels of actual religious beliefs. In other words, this is what Davey calls unattached religion, or in her words, a consciously selected personal package approach to religion, which basically says, you know, I can believe, but I don't have to belong. So what's happening here? What does this have to do with my conversation with Dr. Ash Barker? Well, basically this. My reason for bringing up all this believing and belonging stuff is this. It's my belief that many churches, both here in Britain and in North America, have fundamentally lost sight of what the purpose of the church is meant to be. As I was saying a minute ago, I think if given a choice between emphasizing belief or belonging, which one goes first? Well, I believe many churches, many pastors would choose belief first over belonging. But what Ash is describing in the last show and in this episode that you're about to hear, it's a totally different approach to church and to mission. For him and his wife, Ange, their mission is simple. It's more about belonging first. He says, belief and behaviors, that can come later. We really don't have to worry about those things right now. Just create a space. Be prepared not to be in control of that space once that space has been created. And simply be attentive and open to whatever it is God's already doing or wants to do. Who cares what people believe? What's more important is for us as Christians to see what they have to offer. What skills, what gifts do they bring to the table? We can partner with them, live in solidarity, and I believe this is what authentic biblical community is all about. As true friends, as people who have built real authentic relationships and who demonstrate the love of God. I mean, isn't that what Christians are supposed to be known for anyway? As people who love others? And that's the question that Ash asked at the end of the last episode, and it makes a great segue into the second half of the conversation. Without further ado, then, I bring you part two of my conversation with Ash Barker, Incarnational Living in the Neighborhood. That's the thing, isn't it, is this idea of compartmentalized thinking, and that's, like you say, it's been applied to churches. I remember talking to a pastor in North Wales a couple of years ago, and he was saying, I said, well, just tell me about your church. What are you doing in this particular town that your church is in North Wales? And he said, well, you know, we do certain things for the community. We feed the homeless on Thursdays. And I said, oh, that's great. You know, he said, but ultimately, you know, we're trying to get those guys to come to the church and get saved. And he said, he's what stuck with me was he said, that's what everybody wants, isn't it? You know, then there's these expectations being placed on him, as you say, as the pastor. So feeding the homeless on a Thursday is okay as long as we see some tangible results, whatever that means, which means these people are going to come in and become Christians and join the church. And I guess,
And that's what everybody wants, apparently, according to, you know, and he's trapped in this sort of model, isn't it?
The problem with those people intuitively, particularly in neighborhoods like this, intuitively know what's going on. Feeding is that kind of service is kind of bait. The real thing is to get you to your church.
Yeah. Now,
people play the game.
Oh, they know.
And they'll pray the prayer. They might even come along to your church. But the cost of the giving the food is their soul. And they get that. And other people get that. It's the worst cases of this in Thailand. Literally, they talk about rice Christians. And literally, there will be churches who, if you become a Christian, we will give you rice. And you won't starve to that. And of course, people were willing to do it because they were desperate. But the lack of integrity and credibility that they created for the church.
Yeah.
Church only used poor people, but, you know, all that kind of stuff. So what we always say is the cost of our friendship is not people's soul. But we'll love you even if you don't come to our church because we care about your long-term well-being. That's what we're what we're here for. And if you come to our church, that's great. If you don't come to our church, that's fine. We want everyone to know to meet Jesus. We think that will help you. But that our friendship isn't dependent on whether you do it or not. Because if my friendship is just a means to an end, people smell a rat and they know you're not really being friend. What you are doing is abusing your power.
It's a bait and switch thing, isn't it?
It is. And
holding the carrot out.
And what happens, of course, is when they don't come to church and they no longer friendship, people get that. And as I say, that travels fast in it.
Oh, yeah.
People are vulnerable. They don't want more vulnerability and more abusive power by the church people. There's already, in most cultures that have been pushed to the edge and the margins, there is a kind of culture of poverty that emerges. People become very suspicious of institutions.
Oh,
but institutions are not really for us. They abuse us, whether it be the police, whether it be prison, whether it be schools. All these systems are working against us. So people get into a kind of survival mode. And when the church turns up as just another one of these institutions, are we surprised?
Another service provider.
Are we surprised that people abuse it and avoid it and are suspicious of it? And so it's, we've got to reinvent ourselves. We have to see ourselves. When I introduce myself, I don't introduce myself as a minister. I introduce myself as one of the neighbors.
I just live here.
I work in these areas.
Yeah.
We have a prison here with about 1,600 prisoners.
Wow.
And so one of my roles is as a chaplain in the prison.
Right.
And I quite often introduce myself as a chaplain. So people understand that. I also have a number of other hats. But mostly I do introduce myself as a prison chaplain here because people know the prison. They then know I'm a person of faith. And if they want to talk about that stuff, that opens up all kinds of conversations. I mean, it is a pretty, like we had riots here at the prison at the end of last year. Literally kind of preached the sermon for the carol service, and there were riots a few days later. I need some tips from you on how to preach better sermons, but literally, there was millions of pounds of damage. Because it's really difficult conditions, and so people are really aware of it in this neighborhood. This biggest job provider is actually security and prison. So, you're also living in a community that has literally the highest rates of benefit claimants in the country.
Yeah, you were saying that before.
The Ladywood constituency of which you're a part. And so there's a lot of unemployment. And so often when there's a lot of unemployment, there's issues of crime. But also on the upside is that people have more time. And so people that can come and do things.
Right. You'd be working a 9-to-5 type job.
Yeah.
Can you speak to this issue of interpreting your community? Because I'm sure you're aware of there's a church planning organization in this country called Urban Expression. And one of the things they say is when you want to plan a church, it's got to be in an inner city like Birmingham here.
Yeah.
And they say you have to be self-supporting and you live in that community for a minimum, I think it is 18 months before you do anything. Just listen and interpret the community. I mean, is that your kind of approach to living here in Birmingham?
It's interesting. I know this group and some terrific people involved with it. What we felt is actually people need to identify where we were coming from. And so for Ange, for example, to identify as part of the school, people actually breathed a sigh of relief when they knew if we were just kind of hanging around.
They're suspicious. What are you up to?
Who are you from? Actually, it's friends from New Zealand who are working in Bangkok. And they very much went for that approach. We won't do anything for 8 months, just get to know the community. But people thought there was CIA.
Spies.
But why on earth would a rich couple be in that neighborhood?
Too suspicious.
Obviously up to no good. Yeah. But by identifying ourselves locally with something that's positive.
Yeah.
In Bangkok, we identified ourselves with a community center that was about to close. And so basing ourselves somewhere, giving us something locally positive to do and was a really important part of ourselves. Coming in and saying we're church planters and we're here to help, you know, scare most people off, I think. So, so Anne saying, yes, I'm at school, we're at the bigger house, it used to be a vicarage, but you're all welcome to come. We've got any ideas of how we can make our community better, let's talk about that.
Yeah.
And so part of my role was initially at a college, and now we also have Newbegin School for Urban Leadership, which is very much trying to, 30 years of urban work, what the areas that we found we need to build urban leaders' capacity for is compassion, resilience, and innovation. So they're the kind of qualities we want. So we run all kinds of courses, including local leadership development courses here for people called Newbegin Associates. And so having those kind of local roles that people can identify with is important. But it's true, we didn't start any initiatives ourselves, and actually when you look at what have we done just by ourselves, there's not a lot. Actually, most things have been done in partnership with either school or churches or prisons or local football clubs. Very little has been done in our own rights. Now that means that people know Newbegin House, so this is where we've renamed the vicarage as, and actually people now start to know Newbegin Community Trust, which is the charity, because a number of our neighbours have come together to form that. But actually, when we look, we're going through about the 20 projects that Newbegin Community Trust is involved in. Hardly any of them are in our own right. Most of them are with schools and prisons. Some of the main ones are like community meals where people are getting to know each other. And they meet someone, the partnership forms. And most of them are trying to help most of these initiatives hopefully become something in their own right as well.
Yeah.
We become catalysts. And the language we've always talked about is scaffolding. Can we be like a scaffold and help people grow and build? But we can then pull ourselves off and help something else get going as well after a while. In a neighborhood like this, you do have to think 10 years. You do have to make some long-term investments in relationship. That pays off in the end. But if you're only here for a couple of weeks, that does sound, I know some people are listening and think, 18 months before you do anything, that's kind of crazy. But actually, 18 months is a small price to pay.
The drop in the bucket.
And that's what it takes, actually. And so the reason for that kind of thing is important. So partly so you know who to trust in a neighborhood. When you're first getting into a place, some of the people who must be most responsive to you are not leaders in the community. They're sitting back. Okay, who's this couple from Australia? Are they safe? Are they people we can trust? Are they just another, business? Yeah. Are they going to compete with other people? But the people who are kind of unattached and the people who actually don't have much credibility in the community, they're often the people that latch onto you. Oh, you're
the first ones you meet.
And so you can build things around yourself that way, unattached people belong to you, but the trick is, can we build things around our local people? So with Cooking with Poo, that wasn't built around Ange or my talents, it was built around Poo. And that took us 5 years to know what Poo's really talent, what she's capable of, and trying some things. But it was then built around her gifts and talents rather than our own. So if you go in all guns blazing, this is what happens with a lot of church planters. They get very kind of insecure, when's my church service going to start? And so they do that really quickly and then try and invite people to come around. But they'll only grow it as much as their own network is. It's built around them. It's built around their personalities. And like a lot of church planters are catalytic people, and they get bored after 2 or 3 years and they move on to the next thing.
Move on.
The kind of vision we had is, could we be planted here in Winston Green, but then linked to the world? But being planted here, we're able to connect in all kinds of ways. But the trick is to be planted here, and that takes time.
It goes back to what you said. The model, isn't it? Your basic approach, being planted here and then just looking to make organic connections.
Yes.
As things just open up, a conversation will happen. You'll just, meet somebody seemingly coincidentally.
Yeah, yeah.
Just happens to be
the more you pray, the more the coincidences happen.
Yeah. Because that's the thing, isn't it? I think a lot of people thinking, well, I'm interested in church planting. Mm. But this is the one thing, going back to urban expression, they say, no, we don't want you to go into an urban center and quote unquote plant a church, which is just another an existing model, which is what you just described. Find a building, find a space, build some relationships, get those people in, and just build a church.
Yes.
You know, and it's there's a potential to have that glass ceiling, isn't it? And then when it does kind of fail, maybe at some point, then it's just lost. Christianity has lost another blow against our credibility.
Yeah.
Overall,
I think the other thing we found is that things like discipleship and community building, they really are byproducts of the love that we have for people. So,
yeah.
So at the moment, we've got leadership groups and women, young mums groups and youth groups and all these support groups for mental health. The other thing we don't actually have at the moment is running a service on a Sunday, but we're in discussions now. There actually already is some churches around here. And the local Anglican UIC partnership was saying, well, we've got about 35 people we think we could start a service. Rather than starting it in our own right, can we work and use your building? Can we be part of what you're doing? And as trust kind of gets built, we'll probably start a church at 5. There will be no competition with anybody else and create space for people who are normally part of churches. So we will do those things. But had we done that first, you wouldn't have been able to do any of the other things. And actually, the only people who would have come would have been people who can't relate to anybody else and are kind of only relating to us. But this way, when we start, there'll be whole networks that will come together for it. And that's a much more healthy, sustainable. It's a movement. You want to see a neighborhood movement emerge. And that's possible if you're patient and can work. You still have to work hard. I mean, I think in a lot of people like me who are living on faith support, you kind of have extreme people who work way too hard. They've got fingers in too many pies and doing too much
going on.
But there's others who kind of, they're not doing enough strategic things. They're not getting enough momentum in the neighborhood. And if someone goes, do nothing for 18 months. Some people will do nothing for 18 months.
Yeah, we'll just sit here.
And actually, they kind of lose. You actually have to make a contribution somehow.
Something
that makes a difference. And so, it's about sowing in the right places at the right time.
To be fair to Urban Expression, I guess maybe I didn't say that right. It wasn't that they say don't do anything for 18 months. But
sure.
The idea is, as you're saying,
that don't stab at you.
Don't just sit there and do nothing for a year and a half. But
yeah.
You're not trying to start anything, I guess. You're just building relationships.
Yeah.
You're working in the community. You're getting to know people and listening to people's stories, issues, problems.
Yeah.
And a lot of things can come out of that, can't they? It's funny because as you were talking about it, we've said this before, that it's ironic that since we've kind of left the mainstream church, that has ironically freed us up to do a lot of stuff that we normally wouldn't. Because you get trapped in that Christian bubble, you say, busy work and meetings all throughout the week, and they're all somehow important things somewhere, but then that just takes you away from time you could be spending with people, building relationships, helping people. I'm not sure what that's all about.
Yeah.
Leaving the church has actually freed us up to be more missional.
Yes.
But there's something wrong with that statement, because isn't the whole point of church to be missional?
Yeah.
How does that work? How does that happen?
Actually, a really critical issue. So, one of the things that Blaise Newbegin is really helpful on, he talked about churches of association versus parish based churches. And churches of association really only meet where, people come from all over the place and they meet at church.
There's a
location. Yeah. And the only time they really meet is when they're the church. And Leslie was quite scathing of those churches, actually. He felt like, actually, the church is being responsible for a place. It is to say, how can we look at this patch? This be our patch. How can we be a sign, foretasting instrument of God's coming kingdom in this place? And so that's actually the more important than can we just run a really good church service and get people to it.
Yeah, attractional model.
It's the reimagining the parish-based model where what we're trying to do is see the transformation of a neighborhood. And the church's role is to be an agent for that change. But it's like the mission has become the method. The method of gathering becomes, that's the most important thing. How can we gather and maintain this gathering and do all the things that will help prop that up? But church is just a method. How we gather is just that the mission is the transforming of the place and the people in that, and that God and place are in harmony. And so how we meet should support the ends rather than take people away from it. And I think people traveling long distances to, you know, to see the back of each other's heads for an hour and a half, it's kind of crazy.
And like, then going back home.
Yeah.
See you next week.
Never see each other again.
Yeah, yeah.
It was one of the big issues of my daughter when she went back to Australia. She said, Dad, the only time I see these people is for an, the back of their heads for an hour. On a Sunday, where's the normal churches where people see each other every day in the service they can yell out and go for a smoke at half time?
They're
not normal churches we
know. No.
But actually, they're the kind of churches we need. They're embedded within the neighborhood, that people can walk to them, that it's far more sustainable and resilient than having to travel all these kind of distances.
Yeah.
So I think the mobile modern Western culture has a lot to answer for.
And, commuter church model.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to answer for because you just have to drive a lot. I mean, so we know sociologists like Robert Putnam says for every 10 minutes of travel, you lose 10% of your social capital. That is your ability to relate in non-transactional ways with other people. And so if you're traveling 30 minutes or an hour out of church or to work, you actually have no social capital for your neighborhood. And so I think that they're really critical issues. Never mind the environmental cost of
traffic. Carbon footprint and all that. It's true, isn't it? You're going away from the neighborhood where your children go to school, you know, where you shop, where you do your work. I mean,
what often happens, people shop in one place and go to school in another place and work in another place and church in another place.
Exactly.
And friends in another place. And actually, the only time they're in the neighborhood is to sleep and watch TV. I mean, that's how fragmented it can be in modern life.
And we talk about this idea of cocooning, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's you come home to your house and that's your kind of cocoon.
Yeah.
You pull your car in the driveway or your garage, garage, as they say in this country. How do you pronounce it, by the way? Do you say garage?
Garage.
Now you have to think about it.
Garage.
But, you know, you go in, you flip on the TV, you turn on the computer, you get on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and you don't have to talk to anybody. And then the next morning you get out and drive off to your work or whatever. If you don't want to talk to your neighbors, you don't have to.
That's right.
And that's our Western, you know, and yet you say people are desperate for community. It's amazing. I mean, how the church factors into some of that.
Yeah, I mean, the damage that it's doing to people in terms of isolation, mental health, addictions.
Yeah.
Those three areas are kind of epidemic kind of levels. And I think that part of it, of course, is, I mean, even the cyberspace and, you know, all these kind of
virtual community
that actually they're not grounded in any reality. And they're all on our own terms. It is a kind of consumerism.
We
watch what we want to watch. When we want to talk to someone, we get it on Facebook. The image of ourselves gets more and more distorted about who we really are. The beauty of a place and why it's so important, discipleship, is you can't run away from yourself. Now, the problem with living in a place and really identifying with the neighborhood is the best part about it is you get to know people and they get to know you. The worst part about it is you get to know them and they get to know about you. But that's what community is. And actually, that's where the agenda for discipleship in our lives becomes real and not just imagined. And my fear, and this is Walter Brueggemann is one of my favorite writers. He talks about the difference between space and place. Space is kind of out there. It's to be conquered. But place has story. Place has history. Place has somewhere to belong to. And you can't belong to space, but you can belong to a place. And that set of questions is really interesting.
It's true, isn't it? You mentioned Walter Brueggemann, one of my favorites as well, because one of the things I picked up from Brueggemann was this idea that the church in the West has become so identified with the Enlightenment and modernism, it's become its very identity. And it's he says freedom for action is difficult, you know. And going back to your description of this organic, incarnational model, that doesn't work for most Western churches, I would say. This is the problem that I'm hearing with your whole model, is that people want results. It's like that pastor friend. Isn't that what everybody wants?
Yes.
They want to see people getting saved and the numbers being added and the church growing numerically. And if those things aren't happening, well, starting a football team is actually taking us away from our quote unquote mission. You're dealing with the core values, the core expectations. People are giving their money to this person to enact certain things. And if he or she doesn't do them, you've got a problem. And this is the thing. Would you say is it better to start something fresh like you've done here? You're not attached to a church. You're not beholden to anyone, you know, or would it be, or would you try to go into a traditional church and change them from within? This is going to be incredibly difficult to try to change a traditional structure from within, knowing about all the expectations and everything that you're dealing with.
Yeah, I mean, I can only say from my end, pioneering is just in my blood. That's who we found.
You can't do it any other way.
I don't think I can do it any other way. In saying that, we want to support what's here. And so I've been helping run the service once a month. I've got a handful of people here next door. But for me, once we get, you know, our 35 folks who are, you know, that afternoon together, where we start something fresh and new, and people from the morning service will be allowed to come to it. We don't stop them coming. But they don't have to come to it. And so I think having parallel things is really important. But, you know, people have been really faithful and working hard and actually it does meet the needs for some people. It's just that you need something broader. And when you can start something fresh and new and have it the DNA of the neighborhood rather than just folks who are driving in for it. I mean, that's one of the tragedies of this neighborhood. There are actually lots of church buildings here.
Oh, yeah.
And people attend those churches, but they're not from this neighborhood. And sometimes they used to be.
They were,
But actually, those who are of the neighborhood and participating in the life of the church is a very small number of people. And so, yeah, so I think there has to always be new, fresh expressions. And but they don't have to be – it's not either or, actually. I think you can support existing things and pilot and experiment with new things.
You have to be careful of the binary sort of black and white thinking. Well, I don't know about you, but we are probably running a little short on time. Just as we close, how can people get a hold of you, Dr. Ash Barker? What is the best way, social media platform?
Yeah, I'm on Facebook. I mean, we have a website, newbeginhouse.uk, which has all our information. I'm also on Twitter.
What's your Twitter handle?
At Dr. Ash Barker.
Yeah, at Dr. Ash Barker. So if you want to get a hold of Dr. Ash Barker, you can get a hold of him on Facebook, Twitter. You can always email me, and I'll connect you to him if you can't find him on. So thank you again.
Thank you, Clint.
Ash Barker, this has been great. I've really enjoyed it. Stimulating, interesting conversation. If you want to do this again, I am more than happy.
I'd love to do it.
We'll do it again. All right. Thank you very much.
All right, everybody. Thank you once again for joining me for this fantastic conversation that I had with Dr. Ash Barker all the way down in Birmingham, England. And I'm hoping that you were stimulated and challenged by the topics and the discussion that we had. There's so many things, again, I said at the end of the first show, it's hard to get your head around all these concepts. But in my way of looking at what Ash is talking about, it's really advocating for a totally new, a totally different approach to doing church, to being missional. And I think the main problem that a guy like Ash might have in being compared to your typical sort of everyday garden variety church is that he says, you know, when you look at the things we've actually done, well, on paper, it would seem like we haven't accomplished that much. But the truth is, accomplishing a lot as compared to what? As compared to whom? It's not about getting people into a building and having them agree, as I said at the beginning of this show, with a series of intellectual points or theological principles. He's doing something, he and his wife Ange are doing something completely different. It's completely organic, and they're simply looking for opportunities. And the fact is there's almost no end to the opportunities if you have the eyes to see them. And this is going to be a difficult thing, I think, if you're, let's say, a pastor of a fairly traditional church. Your church might not be growing numerically, and you're wondering, okay, what are we supposed to be doing? What can I learn from Ash Barker and his wife Ange in terms of what they're doing? And I think the hard part that you're going to have is to try to convince your people to be truly missional, meaning to, like what Ash said, he said, if you think about churches, it's not about us, you know, being in a particular location and trying to get people to come into the doors so they can have a meeting. It's about, we have a patch here. We're being put in this place for a reason by God, and we have responsibility over our area, over our geographical spot, wherever you may be located, whether it's an urban setting or more rural church, it doesn't matter. You've been given a responsibility because that's where you're located. And it's about making connections, living in solidarity with people, finding out where they are and not trying to force things or beliefs down their throats, perhaps, but more about finding out what gifts and strengths and skills they have. And as Ash says, creating that space, being prepared not to be in control and just watching what happens. And it's a long-term commitment, even as we talked about the 18 months simply doing nothing and except building relationships and interpreting your community. That's a long time. He said you have to think about a 10 plus year commitment in your neighborhood, in your area. It takes a long time, but he says you're earning credibility. And the truth is, the only way you can earn credibility is by demonstrating consistent faithfulness over a long period of time. There are no shortcuts to credibility. It can only be earned over a long period of time. But the fact is, it can be lost incredibly quickly as well, can it? Before I let you go, I just want to remind you that there are a few ways that you can contact me on social media. You can follow me on Twitter, at Preachers Forum. You can also follow me on Instagram, at Preachers Forum as well. And you can stop by and like my Facebook page, facebook.com/ The Preachers Forum. You can also send me an email, preachersforum@gmail.com. And then one last thing, make sure and stop by my website, www.preachersforum.com. Speaking of religion in Britain, I am now starting a new series of articles about preaching in Britain and exploring further this topic of believing without belonging. So make sure you check in regularly as I post up new content. Once again, thank you for joining me for this episode of British Accents here on the Preachers Forum podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Clint Haycock, and make sure and join me next Friday when I'll be bringing you the first half of a conversation that I had with Mike Nims, who is an Anabaptist who also lives in Birmingham. So if you want to find out what Anabaptists and Mennonites believe and what he's all about, make sure and check back next Friday for part one of my conversation with Mike Nims. Thanks again, and I'll see you again on the Preachers Forum podcast.